Hello and welcome to another TES News podcast. I'm reporter Dave Speck and joining me is news editor Will Stewart. Hi, Will.
Hello.
We've got reporter Amy Gibbons. Hi, Amy.
Hello.
And reporter Catherine Love. Hi, Catherine.
Hi, hello.
Now, coming up, is the supply of new teachers under threat by the DfE's market review of teacher training providers? And we have more evidence of the massive pressure on both teachers and students caused by the teacher assessed grading process at GCSE and A-level this year. But first, our exclusive story revealed two proposals apparently being considered by the government to extend the school day. And this, of course, is to help pupils catch up from lost learning during the pandemic. One option is a compulsory 30 minutes extension of the school day, which would have an academic focus. And the other is a longer voluntary 8 a.m. to 6 p.m. day, which would focus more on extracurricular activities. Now, Amy, since you broke this story last Saturday, there's been a huge amount of reaction to it, hasn't there? And can I ask you, first of all, what are schools saying about this? Or should I say, what are head teachers saying about this?
Yeah, so really, really big reaction to this, like you say. I spoke to Jeff Barton, who's head of the Association of School and College Leaders, over the weekend about how they're perhaps going to take this news. He's not at all keen on the extra 30 minutes of apparently, and I'll put it in scare quotes, got academic provision. He's actually not really keen on the idea of separating academic and then perhaps like enrichment or extracurricular stuff anyway. He thinks, you know, that they're quite intertwined in lots of ways. But he says that he doesn't think that would be, it would be an incredibly narrow view to take that approach. He thinks it's much better. And actually, he quite liked the idea of the longer voluntary 8 till 6 p.m. day.
Well, actually, he said it's not ambitious enough, didn't he?
So potentially not even quite going enough, but what he did quite like about it is this idea of flexibility for schools. And I suppose that makes sense, doesn't it? Heads are going to want to be able to decide what happens at their own schools. Yeah. The argument being they know their own pupils quite well, and also where kind of any gaps in learning or in kind of enrichment or whatever it is might lie after the pandemic. So he's very keen on kind of that more kind of voluntary focus, not very keen at all on the potentially mandatory 30-minute extension to the day. So I think it's from heads, there's quite kind of a clear idea of where they stand with it. There was some new research that we reported on this morning that was quite interesting too, from Cambridge University. And they actually say, or what they found, is that extending the school day with this kind of, if everything was kind of kept the same, so if it was a bit like if you took the school day, tacked half an hour onto the end of it, and you just extended it exactly as it is, that's not really going to help very much. The research showed that doesn't really boost results significantly, nor is it likely to narrow the attainment gap. And actually,
sorry to interrupt you, Amy, but it just reminded me of the law of diminishing marginal returns. Do you remember that old chestnut? Where one apple is nice, two apples is okay, and then three apples is just way too much. It's like half an hour at the end of a school day or extra is just going to, sounds like this is what this research is saying, right? That it's just not going to have any effect at all or hardly any effect at all.
Yeah, it was really interesting.
The thing that interests me about this was the two options that have been, you know, that we've learned have been proposed don't really seem to fit in with what Sir Kevin Collins has, the government's Education Recovery Commissioner, said he wants. Because he, on the one hand, he's been very clear in suggesting that whatever does come should be compulsory. So that would seem to kind of rule out the 6 to 8 optional option, because you know, he's saying if it's optional, then you just get the people who are already benefiting getting the advantage, and you get a virtuous circle, and the people who really need it won't do. But on the other hand, I've also, my reading of what he's after from what he said so far is that he doesn't just want more of the same. So that equally, he wouldn't just want, you know, half an hour's academic stuff at the end. He's talked about, you know, the importance of more extracurricular. So, I mean, I find this story fascinating, but it makes me think that what's going on is obviously, it sounds like within government, there's quite a lot to play for, you know. There's, quite apart from the fact that, as your story noted, Amy, that this all depends on money from the Treasury, doesn't it? Which,
yeah, that would be a massive.
Which we really don't know if they're going to get yet.
Yeah, exactly. So any plans that might be in the pipeline at the moment would be massively dependent on how much money they get. The other thing I meant to note when I was talking through the story before is that both options would likely be funded by the government. So they're not kind of expecting schools to open for that extra time to completely, you know, using their own resources. But as Will's just pointed out, any funding will depend on what the Treasury has to say. And of course, we're yet to hear from them what kind of the final verdict is on that. So yeah, it's really interesting. And it's something that I kind of discussed with Jeff at the time, that these two options do seem to be two ends of the spectrum. You know, it's all completely one way or completely the other way. And neither quite fitting, like you say, with what Sir Kevin has said. He's always been very keen. And he said all the way through, ever since he was appointed, that he liked the idea of kind of sport, music, arts, drama, all sorts of kind of enrichment kind of activities to help with the catch-up effort. But if that's not part of the compulsory plan, then what, I mean, where does he come into it? So yeah, it'll be really interesting to see what they end up going with. And certainly there's been a strong reaction to the two proposals that we've kind of revealed.
It kind of, in terms of kind of Jeff's comments, it kind of reminded me of some of what's been said about the kind of national tutoring program as well. And this sort of kind of quite a strong message from schools that they want the flexibility and autonomy to kind of run catch up and decide where best to kind of place those resources. And that seemed very much to be what Jeff was saying as well, that, you know, if it's going to be one size fits all and, you know, not take into account the kind of the local context, then is it really going to be any good?
That's what head teachers always say, isn't it? And understandably, well, but any government programme, that they want the autonomy to do what they want over it. And I guess that's the thing you have to weigh up, isn't it? If you're in government, you know, do you be top down and impose it and risk annoying schools, or do you risk something not being happening exactly the way you want it?
Because the wider public apparently support the idea of extending the school day, don't they, Amy? My parents seem to be against it, but the wider public is in favour.
Yeah, this was also really interesting.
What wasn't it pretty much split as far as the public were concerned? Was it was pretty marginal one way or the other, wasn't it? Sorry, you.
Yeah,
Amy, you should tell everybody what we're talking about before.
Here we go. I'm just bringing the numbers up in front of me so I don't misquote anything. But yeah, so we know that from this polling that took place, I think it came out on the 24th, which is Monday. So it was a poll done by YouGov, and they found that actually a significant majority of parents of school-aged children, not parents in general, but those of kids at school, are against extending the school days. They're not keen on it. Yeah, and it was more split when it came to adults, you know, the general population. So it's interesting to see that. If you are, I mean, I can kind of understand if you've kind of got children, especially younger children at primary school, you've got a bit of a routine. The idea of kind of pushing everything to an extended day might feel like it's going to be slightly jarring. It'll be interesting to see whether these, you know, what the interpretation of those polling figures might be, whether the government thinks it's better to please parents or better to please the general public, and whether that comes into it at all.
It certainly won't please teachers, will it? I'm just reading this comment from head teacher Amanda Wilson, writing for us this week, and she said that this proposal could just tip teachers over the edge of a very rocky cliff. And it was interesting how she said that, you know, shorter lunch hours, more teaching time, yet without any additional planning time, as leads to the question as to whether the government has just thought this through.
It's a common reaction from teachers, but it's all based on the assumption that if there is an extended school day, then it's going to be them.
Indeed.
Them that are doing that. And I think, again, Kevin Collins has been quite clear that if it is teachers, that I think, A, it's not, they're not going to be forced to do it, and B, that they ought to be paid for it.
Yeah, I mean, Kevin has said, hasn't he? He said, like you were touching on earlier, Will, that he's keen on stuff being compulsory, but also that teachers should not be forced to do more for no more. So those things, I mean, they just about work together. Clearly, if something is to be made compulsory, it'll have to be possible. It's not like if all teachers decided actually, and I'm not saying they would, but actually, I don't want to do anymore. And then Kevin says, we don't want to force them. Then that creates something of a problem.
Couldn't you extend the school day without necessarily relying on teachers? If what you're doing is not purely academic, and maybe it's I don't know, it might be something you could do with support staff. It might be something you could do with tutors who if you're looking at something much more extracurricular, that's more like after school clubs. I don't necessarily see that. I understand teachers' fears, and at the moment it's a bit of a vacuum, so we don't know. But I wouldn't necessarily assume it would be teachers that have to do it.
Yeah, I don't think it necessarily would have to. I have a feeling, though, in reality, they probably would end up having to cover some of it.
I think you're right, Amy, and I'm just looking at Amanda Wilson's piece, got it in front of me. She says, although the word voluntary is mentioned in relation to the extended school day, we all know that very often teaching support staff are the ones that are called upon first to plug the gaps when external agencies can't be found to run clubs. So you can just exactly see the picture, can't you, that, the football teacher hasn't turned up, the football teacher, so that you've got, a couple of dozen kids waiting to play football and the PE teacher has to step in. I mean, the word voluntary is, it's open to interpretation, isn't it? I suppose in some regards.
I think that's going to be one of the things that it will stand off. I mean, the first point is, will they get the money from the Treasury, which is a big if. But then the second thing is just how it plays with the teaching unions, isn't it? Because if they end up having a massive, Barney over that, then it's probably going to be more trouble than it's worth, I would imagine. I don't know.
It's going to be very difficult, I think, to find the middle ground of what the Treasury are happy to fund and what unions are happy to kind of endorse, and also what the government thinks will be useful and also measurable. Because I think what we found out from the Cambridge research today is that if you are just to extend the school day by 30 minutes with an academic focus, that likely isn't going to give you kind of those results that the government perhaps might be hoping for. So then there's also that thrown in there. What do they think, a slightly cynical way of looking at it, but what do they think is going to show success in the catch-up effort as opposed to, what will be popular with schools?
Half an hour sounds barely worth the trouble, basically, I think. If you're going to go to all that effort.
Feels like a detention.
It does sound a bit like a detention. I was also thinking, I don't know whether, I know that it is going to have that kind of extracurricular focus, or that's what has been said. But I mean, if there is going to be any kind of measurement of how it improves, kind of academic outcomes, then I wonder whether there is an issue with, I know the unions won't necessarily want teachers to be forced to do it, but is there an issue of making it purely extracurricular and then the school day is really only for academics? And would that actually really result in students catching up on lost learning in reality, particularly if all the after school stuff ends up being run by external agencies? I mean, I'd say generally it's probably maybe a bit more beneficial if it's with teachers that they know, if it is with any kind of academic focus. So I don't know, obviously a lot to still kind of think out, I think.
Well, I was just going to say, Catherine, can we just move on to GCSEs? Because I know we've got more evidence this week of the massive stress that the teacher assessed grading system is causing to both teachers and pupils. And would it be fair to say that the uncertainty surrounding the grading process is causing more stress for pupils than if they were to sit the actual full exams in a normal year? Could that be right?
I mean, I think it's difficult to say, but I think certainly that the way things are going at the moment with the teacher assessed grades, we've had a lot of accounts from students where they are very worried about the fact that they're sitting so many mock assessments in school. Or equally, you also have the case where students are not sitting mock assessments in school and their school's doing something different, but they know that the one other sixth form down the road is doing mock exams. And so they feel that they're not sort of necessarily getting the same treatment as other pupils in the area. And what really came across, it was, so a lot of these accounts came from this Twitter account, Hold Ofqual and the Government to Account. And they've been collating sort of the way, different ways schools are doing things and how students are coping with that. And I think what really has come across is sort of a feeling of you know, not feeling very informed, I suppose, which I think is the case for both teachers and pupils this year. So kind of getting advice about what's going on very late, pupils sort of feeling that, you know, they're told GCSEs are cancelled, but then they seem to end up doing more exams in school than if they hadn't been cancelled. And I think all of those things sort of combine to create a lot of pressure, which I completely understand, because I think that, you know, obviously exams are quite stressful at the best of times. But I think because this year is so different from any other year before it, and is also in a way more complicated than 2020, where after the algorithm was sort of scrapped, then, you know, it was teacher assessed grades. I think because there's all this kind of pressure on teachers to compile evidence, and schools are using different forms of evidence, I think for students, they're really not that sure on what's going on. And it probably does feel a little bit like they're working in the dark towards something. And that really came across in some of those accounts.
It's pretty bad for teachers as well, isn't it, by all accounts? Mm.
Yeah, absolutely. So, and you've got, I mean, it's very clear from sort of looking at social media and speaking to teachers that the amount of extra work they're doing is phenomenal, because they're obviously doing all the kind of work that usually the exam boards would do in terms of kind of marking scripts and assessing and moderating, and then, you know, working with their school to send off a grade. And then you think, well, if pupils are sort of distressed by this and stressed out by this, then they've also got that kind of pastoral duty of care to their pupils as well. And they've got to reassure them. And I can't really imagine, actually. I think, you know, myself and Dave, we've obviously both taught, and you always end up reassuring students before the exams and kind of giving a bit more support about that. And I think this year it must be very hard because, you know, it's such an unusual circumstance. So I think, you know, when students have questions about it and about how it's all going to go, I think, you know, teachers also aren't necessarily clear how it's all going to pan out.
I just think it's a huge amount of emotional pressure on, and not only on students, but on teachers, as you pointed out, and as Mary Bowser as well points out in the article. So they're making decisions, which obviously they need to make the right decisions for their pupils' futures so that they're kind of their abilities fairly represented and they take the right next steps for them, but also it's a very, very difficult time for the pupils, and they want to reassure them and do their best to support them and look after them and have that duty of care, and those two things are really hard to balance. I mean, normally that's not the teacher's role, you know, to decide on the final grade, obviously. So it must be really hard for them to kind of think, how do you balance those two things? Which one takes priority, if either, you know?
You know, when you look at all this stress, does anyone think it would have been better to just keep the exams, you know, with all the extra measures that were being discussed to account for lost learning and to mitigate for different levels of learning loss across the country? I mean, we had a whole raft of measures that were set to be introduced to, you know, to mitigate. Would we have been better to run the exams and with all those in place in hindsight?
In hindsight, probably, yeah. But that was the thing that they didn't know, because now that's the crazy thing about this, isn't it? In some schools, for the exams, cancelled exam season, you're going to have more exams than ever with more stress. But when they took, to be fair, when they took the decision, they had no idea what was going to happen with schools. They thought they could be closed for large amounts of time. So I don't know. Personally, I think the problems happened last year, because the root of it is last year, because if last year had been run, you know, not there was any easy answer, but if it had been run a bit differently and maybe allowed more appeals and maybe had a system that was a bit more robust, I'm sure a lot of people may shoot me down when I even say this, then perhaps there wouldn't have been such an aversion to doing anything like that this year, and then you wouldn't have had this, you know, this bizarre no algorithm, it's got to be kind of exams that aren't exams kind of thing.
I think the real shame as well with this situation is I think that, you know, regardless of what people's views are on GCSEs and whether they're a good way of assessing students at that age, obviously a lot of groups have come out very strongly against GCSEs this year and have kind of said, you know, this all of this kind of chaos around exams kind of proves almost in a way that we should rethink. But equally, I think, you know, anyone who would be kind of designing a teacher assessed system would not design this. And so it's quite strange, really. I think, you know, that almost that this year and what's happening this year is now definitely almost going to be used as a kind of, we'll look what happens if you give teachers and pupils the onus to do it. It's really stressful. It's really difficult. It's totally inconsistent. And actually, I don't think anyone, if they were proposing a teacher assessed system, would do it in this way, because it is just, there's so many different systems on the go within schools, and it's so difficult.
Proof will be in the pudding, won't it, when we see the extent to which there is grade inflation, and also the extent of appeals in the summer and the workload that could present to teachers and heads having to give up their summer holidays. We'll see how well this has worked in a couple of months' time, won't we?
Well, I think they've accepted there's going to be grade inflation. That's nailed on, isn't it? There's no doubt about it. So I think I'm not sure that will be used to see.
I mean, it depends the size of it, doesn't it? What was it, 12% last year? I mean, I suppose it depends how much more this year it is.
Well, I guess if it's really extreme, yeah.
Well, look, let's move on, because there's been more concern this week over the government's market review of teacher training providers. Amy, this is something you've covered. What is the discussion? What is the discussion at this point? Where is it leading? What could the outcomes be? Do we know?
So the ITT market review, hugely controversial right from the beginning, and actually we haven't known very much at all about what is being discussed up to this point. What we've been able to reveal this week is that one of the potential outcomes is that the number of teacher training providers that are allowed to operate could be reduced. And sources have said, I mean, one source said the reduction in provider numbers could be significant, and another said the government was considering a major reshaping of the market. So we know that, you know, one of the outcomes could be this, you know, this huge kind of change in kind of the number of suppliers that are allowed to operate in the market. And the reaction to that is probably quite predictable. I mean, people are worried. There's a group of universities called Million Plus. They represent modern universities. They're particularly worried about this damaging the pipeline of new teacher recruits. So if we had a reduction in the number of providers, then they kind of say that this could lead to supply problems in the future. One of the things that they said when I asked them about, the story that we did earlier this week, it says there's a risk that major disruptions to the ITT market will place pressures on the partnerships that universities have built up with schools over many years. So those partnerships are in jeopardy. And it says, as a result, moves to limit the number of providers in the system potentially risks damaging the overall supply of ITT in England and therefore the pipeline of people going into the teaching profession. We also put some of these comments back to the department to kind of give them the opportunity to come back. And they said to us that the aim of the review is not to reduce the number of teachers entering training or the profession. I mean, that's no surprise. They're not going to go into it hoping to reduce the number of teacher recruits. But that's certainly the fear, that if this is the outcome of the review, that could happen and perhaps then go against what the DfE was aiming to do in the first place, if that makes sense.
How much has this got to do with the government setting up its own training provider in the Institute of Teaching, which Gavin Williamson said would be cutting edge and would be a model that would revolutionise teacher training? That can't be a coincidence, can it? That's happening at the same time?
Yeah, so they're not kind of, the ITT review is happening on the one hand, and then this the Institute of Teaching is also, the timeline is very similar. So it's being, it was announced, I think it was back in January, and so that's all in the works as well. So I doubt that it's kind of a coincidence. I mean, we know that the government, they launched the teacher recruitment retention strategy back in, I think it was January 2019. They've been looking at the market for a while, and we know that they've had intentions to make some changes. So I'm not surprised that kind of a few things are happening at once. But at the moment, at this stage, we don't really know how directly related the two are, just because we don't know what the outcomes of the review are yet.
How much of a difference could it make? I mean, how many teachers a year would the Institute train?
So I think it's 1,000 a year, which is quite a significant number. But I suppose, it depends on what happens with the review as well, how many providers may continue to operate after that, and therefore how, you know, how much of a share of the market it each might get with the introduction of the Institute as well. But it's worth saying the Institute isn't, I don't think they're piloting their first kind of initial teacher training cohort for a couple of years yet. They're going to start off with the early career framework and MPQ reforms. So that change won't be kind of concrete for a little while.
So sorry to do a terrible thing and put you on the spot on this, Amy, but like 1,000 a year, is that a big percentage of the overall number of teachers you're training a year? I mean, I'm just wondering if you brought that in.
It's 30,000 a year, isn't it?
Right.
Mm, yeah.
So it's relatively small. I mean, presumably the direction of travel on this is teacher training has got more school-based, and there's, I imagine, I don't know, and I don't know if you talk to any people about this, but the kind of some of the kind of working basis for this, for the Conservatives since they've been in power since 2010 is that they're trying to combat what some of their allies see as kind of trendy teaching, and that emerging from university teacher training departments. And if you cut down the number of providers, then maybe it will be the universities that will be hit in favour of more school-based training. Have you got any sense of that at all? Are there fears of that, do you think?
Certainly fears of the university market being hit. Yeah, I mean, well, as I mentioned with we spoke to Million Plus, they were saying that university leaders may start to reconsider ITT provision if the reforms are sort of overly burdensome or disruptive. So there's certainly fears that universities could end up pulling out, which some people would argue is bad for teacher training because universities obviously push research, push the profession forwards. And so I know the Institute of Teaching was controversial because it feels quite, well, it certainly is quite centralised. It doesn't feel
do you think they're issuing that as a threat? Do you think that's supposed to be the university? Do you think they're supposed to be saying, don't do this or else we'll pull out and you'll be in a mess? Because I would have thought that for some people that'll be exactly what they want to happen.
Oh, you mean that some people in the government?
Well, maybe they wouldn't want them to pull out and just leave them without enough capacity. But in the end, I definitely think some people in the government would prefer a teacher training system that is skewed more towards, you know, what goes on directly in schools and less away from kind of academic based teacher training. I just wonder if it's a threat that might backfire. But
yeah, I totally get what you're saying. I wonder, I mean, what the uni leaders might say is if enough people pull out, then potentially that really is going to hit supply because there won't be, you know, that access point from a university side of things. So, so I think that would be the warning. But you're right. I mean, I'm not sure exactly what the government kind of envisaged they want the market to look like. I suppose we'll find out very soon when the public consultation does happen.
What surprised me is that the review into the teacher training providers is being led by Ian Baucombe. And I think we've heard his name a couple of times before in the last few months, who's the interim chair of Ofqual. I mean, he must be a busy man, don't you think? If he's doing this as well, he's overseeing the grading process.
Wearing
very influential. Yeah. Mm. He's, I mean, I've heard him spoken of as a potential next Ofsted chief inspector as well. So somebody to watch, I think. Well, Amanda Spillman's got another 2 years. We learnt this year. So yeah, sorry, this year, this week. So yeah, not until after 2023.
I think it'll be, sorry, I was bringing in another story there, but it'll be interesting to see where she picks up on after all of the COVID stuff. Obviously, there were some priorities that were set ahead of that happening, and she's now been given a bit of a chance to finish off that work. So yeah, I'm looking forward to seeing what happens with that. It'll be another story to watch, definitely.
Well, look, I'm sure we've talked enough for 1 week. Unless anyone else has got any more for any more.
Probably rambled on enough.
We have indeed. And we'll see you soon. Bye.
Bye.
Bye.